Hello and welcome to the Campaign podcast. I am Lucy Shelley, tech editor at Campaign, and this podcast was recorded at the Design Museum in London with Krista Berger, senior vice president of Barbie and head of dolls at Mattel, as we have an exclusive touring preview of Barbie the exhibition. Krista has been at Mattel since 2008, and this exhibition coincides with the 65th anniversary of the Barbie brand, exploring the story of Barbie through a design lens, including fashion, architecture, furniture, and vehicle design. In this podcast, we will be taking a tour through the years and lives of Barbie, discussing inclusivity, brand collaborations, and how to stay relevant and inspire after 65 years. Take a listen. In your career with the brand, what have been some of the standout cultural moments in Barbie for you?
It's such a great question. I'll tell you that I think one of the most humbling and honoring things of working on Barbie is that you are a chapter and a legacy. You know, I stand on the shoulder of giants who came before me. Ruth Handler, who started the brand, was such a visionary. And what we've done in the time that I've worked on the brand, I'm immensely proud of. But our goal is always to leave the brand better than we found it, because we know the brand will live on past us now. So we really view ourselves as brand stewards who are ever trying to evolve and ensure that Barbie is better reflecting the world that is around her. And so in the time that I've been on the brand, a few of the moments that I'm most proud of start around the 2013-ish year, where we began the evolution to really diversify the doll and, again, better reflect the world that is around us. And so that started with introducing more hair textures, skin colors, eye colors, face sculpts, and then ultimately body types. That was huge and a really pivotal and cultural moment. Two other things that, of course, I have to mention. One is, as we further amplified our commitment to sustainability and introduced the world's first doll made from ocean-bound plastic with Barbie Loves the Ocean, that was such a proud moment. And then, of course, Barbie the movie. How could I not fail to mention, you know, that little movie phenomenon that took over the world last year, and the role that toy played in that as well.
It's such an exciting collaboration to see, and as we go through the exhibition, we'll talk more about body types, inclusivity, the movie, of course, and also brand collaborations. I can't wait to show everyone the chairs. I thought those were crazy. But let's go to the first Barbie.
All right. To sort of paint the picture, we've just walked into, we're fully immersed in a room full of pink right now. In the background, you might hear the very first Barbie commercial playing in the back with the first jingle. And standing in stunning glory on full display, slowly rotating, is the number one Barbie doll right in front of us. And her iconic blonde ponytail, her signature black and white swimsuit. She's the doll that started it all.
Forever dolls are sold.
Someday I'm gonna be exactly like you. Till then I know just what I'll do. Barbie, beautiful Barbie. I'll make believe that I am you.
You can tell it's Mattel. It's swell.
You know, one of the most fascinating things about the brand is that Barbie invented the fashion doll category, first of its type, revolutionary, step forward in play. And from the very beginning, Barbie represented to the world that girls had choices. Prior to this, all dolls were mostly like baby dolls and really were encouraging girls to play out roles of wifedom and motherhood. And Barbie showed girls that they could be anything.
I mean, yeah, if anyone that doesn't, you know, remember what the first Barbie looks like, you only need to see the first 5 seconds of the Barbie movie, and it's the iconic swimsuit, is it? Margot Robbie wears with that, yeah, like you said, that huge ponytail, which has now become incredibly famous. And at the end, we will see the 65th anniversary doll, which has been inspired by the same designs.
Yes.
So you said, you know, we talked about how Barbie reflects the world around her, and, you know, she evolves with changes within pop culture and things like that. So how does Barbie, the brand, and Barbie the doll retain its impact and reflection on pop culture over the last 65 years?
Oh, such a good question. You know, Barbie is at its best when we are in a two-way dialogue with society and culture. So it's this fascinating thing where Barbie reflects the world and the world reflects upon Barbie. And so it really is almost like this time capsule of culture for the past 65 years. And staying close to consumers and leveraging the Mattel playbook with consumer-centric innovation. Understanding who our consumers are, evolving alongside them, is what's helped Barbie maintain its relevancy from the very beginning to today.
Mm-hmm. And yes, so I mean, what's important in these conversations and keeping up to date? What are some of the processes that you go through to make sure that it's accurately reflecting the world around you? And also, you know, like you said, when you want to leave it in a better place that it's left.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we will always do is seek authority and counsel when we're trying to reflect the world around us. So we have a team of world-class experts and a leading center for consumer research within the home of Mattel. So we're always in constant dialogue with our consumers. So understanding what's important to them, understanding kids, where they are today, where they're going, how they're different from the generation before them, what's top of mind. Of course, we're studying like the cultural zeitgeist. So what is trending in things like fashion and design of all different disciplines? And so at any given time, we're sort of talking to society, we're talking to adults and gift givers, and we're studying kids. And then what we'll do is we'll seek out that input from those who really have that sort of lived experience to influence us. Mm-hmm. And then I've got to just toot our own horn with the world-class designers that we get to work with, who are really artisans and craftsmen who bring their talents to the doll every day.
Mm. Well, let's walk on through. So next we have a video depicting the making of the doll. We won't talk about too much because that's slightly unfair on our listeners. But we have the timeline here. Are there any kind of key points that you'd like to point out? I know we've got quite a few.
Yeah, over 65 years. I'll try not to belabor it too much as we look at it. But, you know, I think one of the things that we love to sort of talk about is even the origins of Mattel. So Mattel was actually founded in California, but in a garage. And we'll talk about Mattel Creations and that sort of innovative entrepreneurial spirit and how that carries through everything that we're doing today. So I mentioned Ruth Handler, who's, you know, one of our founders and the creator of Barbie, and how much of a pioneer she really was from the very beginning. And Barbie was launched in 1959 because Ruth had the tenacity to take what she knew was important and could be game-changing, inspired by the way her daughter played with the doll, and bring it to New York Toy Fair after she was told no and no and no again. And then you think about 65 years later, what this brand has become, the international icon at Barbie stands for, so much more than this singular product that a bunch of male executives told her would never work. And so I think that that spirit of tenacity, of creation, that, again, entrepreneurial like chutzpah that it takes to bring something is carried through the brand. And so we're looking at a timeline that marks major introductions of dolls and pivotal moments in Barbie's history. But it all comes back to that original spirit that's carried through. And again, the stewards who have helped evolve the doll at every stage along the way.
Yeah, so we can see here we've got 1980, which is the first Black and Hispanic Barbies are launched. Superstar Barbie, another brilliant one. Ken launches as well, and Alan as well.
You can't forget Alan.
I forget the actor that played him in the movie, but it's added a new life and a new kind of character and personality.
Absolutely.
But if we talk a little bit about inclusivity for now, I mean, you know, the Barbie brand, as it has attempted to represent the world around it, it has also invited a lot of criticism, female body stereotypes, things like that. So I wonder now what important discussions have to take place to ensure this doesn't happen and that you are being fair, being inclusive, and also how do you react to criticism and things like that?
Absolutely. I think it's an interesting thing as it goes back to the idea of how do you ground a brand in purpose, use it as your North Star, and ensuring that you're using that for all lenses and touch points, whether that be marketing or product design or every single filter that you're putting out. So, you know, I talked about one of the biggest cultural moments that was important in my career, which was back in 2013 in the beginning of the evolution, which led to the Barbie body. And one of the things that really started to get our attention is two things. Sales were stagnating. And at a time when, you know, there were other brands, Dove and the Real Campaign for Beauty, coming out and sort of evolving this conversation, Barbie had stayed still. We were no longer reflecting the world that we saw around us. We were sort of stuck in this previous version of where culture had been, and we didn't evolve with it. And for the first time, we heard moms tell us things like, oh, I played with Barbie as a kid, but I never let my daughter play with it, which are gut punches for someone who's a brand steward. And that was such a huge lesson to the brand because we realized that we have to be constantly in lockstep lockstep with culture. We have to be evolving alongside it. And because that sort of like feet on the fire in terms of what could have taken a real turn for the worse in the brand's history and ultimately led to this major sort of re-energizing evolution, pushing forward for the brand, it feels very recent to all of us who still work there. And it is now something that we talk about with pride, with the guts and audacity it took to do something. You know, 50 years into a brand, we changed the product, which disrupted the entire system of play. When you changed the doll's body type, you also had to change and ensure that it worked with every product that went alongside it. We have to make sure that all the dolls fit in cars, that they fit in elevators, they sit in chairs, that the fashions all fit the same way. And so we disrupted our own system of play 50 years into a brand's life cycle because it was important to the purpose.
I think one of the important points that you mentioned there is relating purpose to commercial prospects as well, and that they can be related.
Absolutely.
And I think some brands struggle to see that, but where's the business incentive from aligning with the purpose and how can I make that work? But that's a very good example of how it can work and how, for a brand to be successful and to make an impact, it does have to make money, but it can also serve the purpose as well.
Yeah.
So we've moved to the logo board, which I wanted to stop at because it has such a brilliant evolution of how logos have changed. And it's also something that is quite fascinating and satisfying to see. And I wondered if you could tell us about some of them.
Absolutely. So there's a few things. We're looking at the wall of evolution of logos from 1959 to present. And there are six depicted on the wall, the original logo. Then we move into the logo change from 1976 to 1991, which is sort of this bold bubble logo. From 1992 to 1999, this logo was under the stewardship of Jill Berard. And so this logo was bold and brilliant and really, if you think about font as a reflection and the personality it was portraying, this was in one of the heights of the Barbie brand when it was really sort of omnipresent and synonymous with girls' childhood. And so the thickness of the line, the boldness and type sort of reflected the strength of the brand.
And that's also the one that the film has more closely used.
The film logo pulls from a few together to sort of merge. And I think what's brilliant about the film logo is there's enough pulled from each of these that it feels like the logo you had or you knew from Barbie.
So everyone can.
It's very personal.
Yes.
And then we look at some of other ones. So there's a logo from 2000 to 2003 and 2003 to 2008 that are more in script. And what was interesting is this was meant to personalize the Barbie logo with girls as though it was Barbie's signature, as though she hand wrote her name on the package herself. And then in 2009, we went back to a logo that was more closely tied to the very original one. And that's the logo that is still out today.
We are currently stood under a hair chandelier, which is not something that I thought I'd ever see. But it does look fantastic. And this room is all about some of the fashion and hairstyles that the Barbie doll has gone through. But talking about the film a little bit more, when we spoke about inclusivity and moving the Barbie brand forward, how important of a role do you think the film played in this?
I think that the film has been this sort of beautiful amplification of a journey the brand has been on, and with the most brilliant and trusted partners that one could ever hope to have. So again, we talk about standing on the shoulders of giants and legacy and marketers and designers who have come before you and leaving the brand better than you found it. And this is another great example and evolution of that, where in working with trusted brand stores and trusted partners and, the people who are the best at what they do, they continued that story. They continued and started, another chapter for Barbie. And I think for a lot of adult fans or society who maybe had hit pause on their relationship with Barbie, they reintroduced her to them. And now we have an opportunity to further engage, this adult and societal fan base who's interested in the brand again, which is a really fun and exciting opportunity.
I think that's what has been very interesting to see, isn't it? It's from what you said earlier about,
parents not wanting their children to play with Barbie. It's now, I'm going to play with you.
Absolutely. And even before the movie came out, I'll just sort of say that that statistic, again, was in the early 2010s. Mm-hmm. And then before the movie came out, we sort of recommissioned that research. And the brand is so proud of the fact that we are the number one choice for gift giving now at parties. And so you talk about really re-energizing a brand or shifting that perception of the brand as a role model and how it can pay out into commercial success and sales. It was critically important.
So let's talk a bit more about the commercial success, but also the brand collaborations that has happened. We are in a room right now full of the Malibu Beach House and some of the famous cars that have been associated with the Barbie universe. And if we can just walk around to the chairs.
Yeah.
So this is a partnership with Cartel.
Yes.
And they have the sizes for Barbie, but they also have life-size models of these chairs, which I'm sure cost an absolute fortune, but they are gorgeous. And I was wondering if you could talk a bit about brand collaborations, but also what brands can learn about Barbie and Mattel's approach to this kind of marketing.
Yeah, there's layered questions, really fantastic ones. The Barbie Cartel partnership with these sort of, you take an Italian designer and an iconic in their own right, and then layer in that Barbie aesthetic. And you think about, again, Barbie's influence on and influence by design disciplines all the way down to something like furniture. And it's just this remarkable collaboration, partnership reflection of how this brand has become so iconic and bigger than just a doll. And I think one of the things that I love hearing from some of the fashion partners or, you know, design partners in any right that we work with is the fact that Barbie, for many of them, was their first muse, their first little model, and the role that Barbie plays from childhood into adulthood and how your relationship with her can evolve is something that we love to celebrate. We love to pull out that thing that makes it uniquely Barbie, celebrates an aspect of the brand, amplifies what our partners are already doing, already known for. But we're always also looking for ways to tell new and interesting stories. And so when we think about what kind of partners that we're going to collaborate with, we're always looking for that negative. Like, what has never been done before? What new and interesting story can we tell? How are we amplifying shared vision here? And so this Barbie Cartel partnership is a really fantastic one. It's so playful. It's so beautiful and stunning in its simplicity.
There's something quite satisfying about seeing things in miniature as well, isn't there?
Absolutely. I mean, everything's like just cuter and more delicious.
If you have one of those life-size chairs, you just have to get the Barbie one as well, don't you?
Yes.
You can't as a pair. Yeah. So whilst we're here, we're talking about brand collaborations. How do you balance the arguments of kind of consumerism and, you know, creating more things in the world whilst also balancing the kind of the need for play and just the need for fun?
There are a few ways that we approach this. It is very much top of mind, not only for the Barbie brand, for the Mattel enterprise as a whole. So Mattel has a commitment on sustainability initiatives to achieve 100% bio-based, bio-resin products by 2030. And so we have been doing fantastic work. We have made huge strides and have been there in a sustainability space with ICSS-certified packaging for a while now. I mentioned that we introduced the world's first fashion doll made from ocean-bound plastics. Literally, we rescued trash headed for the ocean and converted it into play. So there's this idea of, you know, how to create a closed circular economy where we're reusing. But I think more than that, with Barbie, these dolls are not meant to be played with and discarded. And so, you know, one of my treasured childhood memories is actually playing with my mom's Barbie dolls that my grandmother had saved. And that was my first handshake with the brand. These are dolls that are meant to be passed down with or played, not used quickly and discarded.
I'd like to talk about the exhibition itself now. And, you know, what does it mean to be able to bring this all to life today? So it goes live tomorrow on Friday, the 5th of July, and it's exhibiting till February. So it's a really long time that it's going to be around. Yeah. But yeah, what does it mean to bring this all to life?
You know, I was walking through earlier this morning and just said, for those who are fans of the brand or maybe have seen other exhibitions or pop-up experiences or just even been to, you know, a local store where you've seen Barbie on shelf, I would encourage you to come see this because as someone who's seen a lot of Barbie displays, the brand is presented in a new and different and interesting way. Mm-hmm. And I still find and am pulling inspiration from that in here. And I think one of the things that is so unique about this particular take on it, which is why we're so delighted to be at the Design Museum, is it's not just this chronological story of, oh, the brand was introduced in 1959 and here are the things it's done. It's really a study on the design and artisanship mm-hmm. of toy making and what it takes to do all these things in miniature, the complexity it really takes to create an 11.5-inch scaled world and the depth and the way that that's evolved, everything from, to the point, literal engineering and the original patent for the doll design is here, the complexities of how it takes to evolve the ball, the Barbie doll, things like Twist and Move or Walking Barbie and the mechanical complexities behind that, the architectural design and the dream house, you know, and then everything to literally creating these beautiful garments that Barbie wears. So there's a ton of craftsmanship in here, and it's just a beautiful storytelling reflection of the brand. So that's what I love about this. And then the really playful interpretation or presentation. So, you know, I'm standing in this room and I'm looking at this big circular oval window that has astronauts suspended in the air. One of these dolls, which actually went to space. So we That's talk good. About brand collaborations and partnerships. So the brand worked with Samantha Cristoforetti, who's an astronaut, who actually, we made a one-of-a-kind doll of her, and she took it into space with her. So we've got a video here that shows her in the International Space Station. She brought her Barbie doll with her. Getting a doll into space is very complex, for those who are wondering. And not only did we send her up in her true-to-astronaut suit, we sent two different fashions with her as well. So they went up with Samantha. They spent exactly. The doll spent time in the ISS, and now it's here, suspended from the air as though she was in zero gravity amongst other Barbie astronauts from our history. So the very first Barbie astronaut was actually introduced in 1965. And so you think Barbie went to the moon before Neil Armstrong. She's always been a pioneer in space, and that's continued through our brand history. So continuing to show girls that you can be anything from the very beginning.
That's absolutely awesome. And I think the scope for brand collaborations is a really interesting one. I mean, is it open to anything? Are there any kind of brand collaborations that you would avoid, you wouldn't look at? I mean, obviously there's some obvious ones, but, you know, you think about all the things that are part of the universe of Barbie. The world really is your oyster when it comes to thinking of brands that you can collab with. How does the conversation start? Is it more of a, you know, you reach out to them, they come to you? How does it get started?
Goes both ways. I'll tell you, there are brands and partners that have been at the top of our wish list that we will reach out or court, and sometimes it's a very quick, easy conversation. We'll have brands come to us. Again, it's that two-way dialogue with sort of the cultural zeitgeist and conversation. You know, always going back to that idea of can we tell a new and interesting story together? Are we grounded in sort of the same rooted shared purpose? Are some of those big filters that we will use when establishing, like, is now the right time? What new and interesting thing should we be doing this year, next year? What story are we amplifying or telling together? And is it the right time in brand history? I'll tell you, again, thinking of where we've come from the early 2010s to today, there are partnerships that we are exploring now or that have recently come out that we never could have. We wouldn't have had the authenticity or credibility to be in that space. Mm. And now we do. And so we also want to make sure that we are respectful stewards of that and capitalizing on that and continuing to move the brand conversation forward.
Mm. And so how does a brand remain authentic like Mattel? I mean, you know, like I said, there's so many avenues you can go down. How do you work out that it's, you know, it's a partnership and a relationship that works and is right for your audience and also the place that you want to go, so maybe your potential audience or your future audience?
Yeah. So Barbie is celebrating its 65th anniversary this year. Mattel is celebrating its 80th anniversary next year. And you think of most toy brands have a life cycle of 3 to 5 years. And we're talking about a portfolio and enterprise rich in history with brands that have long exceeded that. And really the reason they're able to do that is because we run the Mattel playbook throughout our portfolio of enterprises. So we amplify brand purpose. We ensure that every brand within our portfolio has a reason for being. We talk about being culturally relevant, so staying in lockstep with that zeitgeist two-way conversation and having really difficult conversations, not being afraid of that, of where we are at, when we need to evolve, when we need to pivot and change. We'll talk about consumer-centric innovation, so ensuring that really the consumer is at the heart of everything we're designing for, and how do we exceed their expectations.
Yes.
And then it's a franchise mindset. So, mm-hmm. you know, you think of Barbie was introduced as a singular 11.5-inch fashion doll and is now an international icon that spans all sorts of categories and entertainment and lifestyle experiences. And without that franchise mindset from the very beginning, it could have been so small. Mm-hmm. But there is always that opportunity, if you're following that playbook, to amplify and make something bigger.
Let's go into the final room now, which is shiny and silver, as it should be. And we have some amazing pieces of fashion in front of us. We've got Barbie wearing the famous dress that Rihanna wore at the Met Gala. We've got some of the famous costumes from the film, including the roller skates and the pink dress.
Yes.
Do you think the film is one of the brand's greatest success, or is there a bigger moment that you think has helped shape the story of Barbie far more?
I think that the film is an incredible exclamation point within the brand's history. Certainly, you know, it was the biggest grossing film of Warner Brothers' entire history. You know, it shattered box office records. It accomplished so much, and we are so proud of that. The interesting thing about Barbie is that for 65 years, there has always been a bigger moment, right? So you think about everything the brand has stood for, these major moments, you know, the 50th anniversary, there was this big New York Fashion Week runway show, and it was like, oh, how are you going to top that? Mm. You know, we were on the cover of Time magazine with the body evolution. Now can we stop talking about my body? That magazine cover is displayed here in this room. Thought about that, like, oh, well, now we changed the product. We did it. We're done. The movie came out. You know, for 65 years, the brand has been a reflection of culture, and culture doesn't stand still. So the movie is certainly going to be something that is celebrated and revered as a great accomplishment in brand history, but it certainly won't be the last biggest accomplishment within brand history.
No, I'm sure not, and I hope not. You look quite mischievous when you say that. The last thing I want to talk about was the weight of responsibility that you must feel as a brand. You know, you, like you said, you evolve with the times, you have an influence on either young children, but like you said, people across the world. So how do you deal with that responsibility? What does it feel like in your role personally?
Yeah, I will, if you'll allow and indulge me, I'll take it really personal. So I have two daughters who are 4 and 6. And so the real role that this brand can play hits really close to home. And I certainly had my own relationship with the brand as a kid. I shared that I played with my mom's dolls when I was younger that my grandmother had saved. I had a professional relationship with the brand long before I became a mom. But my relationship to the brand has evolved now that I am both brand steward, consumer, all of the things. And I'll tell a true story recently. So we recently introduced a role model doll of Christy Yamaguchi, who's a U.S. Olympic athlete figure skater. Personal favorite of mine. And I had the doll in the back seat of my car. I was driving my 6-year-old Daisy to school, and she picked up the doll. She goes, "Mommy, what is this?" And so I told her who Christy was, what she had accomplished. And then I said, "So, Daisy, Mommy and Barbie and all of Mommy's friends at Mattel worked to make this doll to show girls that you can be anything." And my 6-year-old looks me dead in the eyes and goes, "But Mommy, I already know that." Now she is highly exposed to you can be anything rhetoric and language and has been since she was born. But that is the weight that I feel. And really, I want every girl who comes into contact with this brand, I want to give them the opportunity so that they know in their bones that they can be anything, that they can do anything. And by amplifying more women role models, by furthering that message, by leveraging our platform to establish that through things like toy, through our marketing materials, through beautiful exhibits like this that talk about evolution, you know, I know we're sort of on that right path. And at the end of the day, my goal is to leave this brand better than I found it, because I know it will long outlive me and the role and the chapter that I've played here. but I think we're on the right path. Now twist my hips, watch me go. Cool. Put it all together. Oh, oh, yeah. I want to
dance moves, Barbie, and I want to dance for you. You can really make dance moves Barbie doll dance, and when you rock her waist, she moves her arms, dolls all separately.
If you'd like to learn more about what we have been discussing today, please visit our website at campaignlive.co.uk. Details of our subscriptions are available at campaignlive.co.uk/membership. And if you enjoyed this episode of the podcast, please follow us, like us, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. Big thank you to Haymarket podcast producer Nav Powell, and thank you to you for listening. I hope you will join us next time, and on behalf of the campaign team, goodbye.